Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for October 27th, 2008, and on this episode, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews Sean Graney, Karen Aldridge, and Jeffrey Carlson. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago! And let's talk theater.
I'm Ann Nicholson Weber, and this is Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a most interesting production at Chicago Shakespeare of The Troublesome Reign and Lamentable Death of Edward II, King of England, with the Tragical Fall of Proud Mortimer by Christopher Marlowe. And joining me to talk about this production are Sean Graney, who is the artistic director and founder of The Hypocrites, and a director about town who is making his Chicago Shakes debut with this production. Karen Aldridge, a Chicago actor who is playing Queen Isabella in this production. And Jeffrey Carlson, a New York-based actor, although he's acted in Chicago before, who is the titular Edward II. So thank you all three for joining me.
Thank you.
There's a lot to praise and talk about with respect to this production, but the really striking thing about it is the way that it's staged, which is in what's called a promenade style of staging. And I guess we should start just explaining what that is. So, Sean, if you could describe what's unusual about the way this is staged.
Sure. Promenade style of staging a play means that the audience gets to walk around with the actors and change their point of view depending on where they want to look.
So in this production, there's just basically one square space, as I remember it, and everybody's in there together.
Yeah, a big open space, and there's some seats that people can sit in temporarily until we need them, and you just move about the space, the area.
And I know that you've done other plays in this style. I didn't see either of them, but you did Mud and you did Miss Julie for Hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, though, this is a little different in that there is no part of – there's no area that belongs exclusively to the audience and there's no area that belongs exclusively to the actors. Is that different from those productions?
It's slightly different from one production, the Mud production that I did. Mm-hmm. I also did a production for 48 Psychosis, which was similar to this idea that the stage is inhabited by both audience and actor.
And I imagine you had to do I know I was even a little anxious about, you know, would I know how to behave? How would I know? How is this going to work? Lobby panels and an announcement before kind of explain the rules, which you could give us now?
The rules are basically if you're in an area that the actors need, the actors will ask you to move. Other than that, you just go where you want to go.
And all those seats sometimes are for the actors, and if they're not using them, you use them and hope that you don't get shushed out.
Completely.
But it's fine if you do.
I sort of think of it as a bus. If you're on a bus, it's just the same etiquette mm-hmm. as if you're riding a bus. If you know someone that needs that seat, then you'll get up, or if you're standing in someone's way, you'll just move.
Right.
So.
Right.
Sort of those same type of social rules that we're used to, but just not completely used to in theater.
In theater, right. Certainly it's an unusual deal as you come in as an audience member. Well, so that kind of sets the stage. I'd like to now talk to the actors about what it's like for you and how you prepare to do something that seems to me must be very, very different from what you're used to. So maybe you could start, give us an idea.
Well, preparation is sort of, you don't. I mean, you know, early on in rehearsal, I pride myself on being one of the actors that when I wasn't in a scene, I would get up on the stage. But I just love to watch. I love to watch the other actors work. But I also deliberately got up and sat on the in the playing area just to sort of symbolize audience. In fact, then people were like, okay, you know, they would look and they go, oh yeah, you're audience now. I'm like, yeah, I'm audience.
You're not in this scene, Karen.
right. But you don't really prepare for the promenade because you don't have people coming in and using the space. Mm-hmm. So for me, the first couple of shows that we had, which we had a couple before the official preview, the first couple of performances were daunting, and I dropped a lot of lines, and mm-hmm. it was sort of, oh my God, I didn't think it would be so scary, mm-hmm. Because I've been in spaces where the audience is near. And I've actually done a show up here where we entered the audience area, but we didn't. They weren't sort of surrounding us. But now I thrive on it. I absolutely need like 25 or more in order to actually feel like I'm going to have a good show, to be honest with you. And it's sort of interesting that now I'm like that.
So it's going to be an adjustment to go back to being away from the audience.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeffrey, what about you? What was your experience of?
I had never done anything like this before. And I was very curious. I, too, was worried about concentration mm-hmm. and if the audience, in fact, would pull you out by trying to move them, and then you wouldn't know what comes next. But it's actually been remarkably, I don't want to say easy because it's not an easy play, but I'm starting to thrive off of it, too, and really mm-hmm. enjoy having them there. It feels very cinematic. It feels kind of like TV work when people are all up in your grill and they're standing right next to you and you can't, there's no room to lie. You don't want to lie anyway, but there's really no room to lie. Mm-hmm. You're trying your best to negotiate the audience and the truth of the situation and how fast paced it is with all the weirdo town crazy things that happen.
For instance?
Swinging on a chandelier, getting my dead boyfriend's head in a plastic bag that says, have a nice day.
Right. Yeah, it's a wild, very gory, very action-packed script, which I had never seen before, so I don't have a way to compare it to a more conventional production.
I am going to miss, though, in going into a proscenium show next, not having the people standing there. I'm going to miss them. They're like friends. Sometimes you want to hold their hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would imagine it feels very risky, though, because you're really trusting that the audience members aren't going to screw you up somehow. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no safety net somehow. Is that something you're thinking about or conscious of, or has that become a non-issue?
I don't think I have any problems with trust. Mm-hmm. There are, from time to time, people who are not cooperating quite like you would want them to, that they'll walk through a scene while it's happening just to get to a different space, and that you sometimes say, I just wish you would have held on for one more second. Mm-hmm. Or when you fear everyone rustling, trying to see, and the scene's actually very quiet, you just want to be like, hold still for just give me 1 minute.
Yeah, right.
And then you can move. Uh-huh. I'll help you move because I'm going to be charging through you in a second anyway. But so I don't think trust is part of it. It's just, you know, I would say 98% of our audiences have been completely cooperative mm-hmm. and have loved it in a strange way. Mm-hmm. They're not too hip on being real close to me when I'm dying, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to give any of that away. So,
yeah. Well, I am. Oh, okay. Because one of the questions I wanted to ask Sean, almost all of the play is staged, you know, all over the space and among the audience, except the executions, of which there are a number, which are all executed over in a corner, kind of behind semi-transparent shower curtains is what it looks like. So I was interested why you felt that you couldn't do the killing, except the final killing, in the midst of the audience.
Well, that came mostly from the theater. The idea, mostly concerns of Chicago Shakespeare, who were extremely supportive of this whole process. And they would come to me every other day with a list of concerns because they had never done anything where the audience sort of mixes with this. And one of their concerns has always been blood. And after about the fourth time I promised that I wouldn't get blood all over the audience's coats, and then they came to me again. I was like, all right, I'll tell you what, we'll make a deal where we'll just concentrate all the use of blood in one area of mm-hmm. the stage. Mm-hmm. And that's where the idea of this tented off area came from, and it was originally just the tent, and we used to call it the kill tent. And then one day when I first looked at it, I was like, wow, that should be a bathroom. And then the designer was like, absolutely. Uh-huh. It's a seafoam green bathroom. And then it all just came from there. So,
well, I think
bathroom of death.
The bathroom of death.
It was actually, I mean, I wondered whether you had done it because it would be really hard to convincingly do have the violence that close to an audience, where the illusion would be difficult to maintain. But
that's a very good side product. It's a very good byproduct, excuse me, of what we came up with. It was It's great because then we don't have to worry about selling the reality of the violence so much. We can just conceal it and then reveal the effect of the violence, which I enjoy what we came up with, how it all
worked
together. Well, of course,
the unseen monster is always scarier anyway, so I think that it probably is more effective. It's more disturbing.
Your imagination takes over.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, have there been any incidents other than people who wouldn't, you know, quite make way the way you need it? Has anything gone wrong with this very ambitious undertaking?
I don't think anything's gone wrong. There's been a couple of people that have been inside of my throne, or they're up in the big chair pile, and you have to sort of, it takes time to move them.
Mm-hmm.
Or when there was a big group of people standing on the staircase, it kind of, the play comes to a little bit of a halt while you're trying to negotiate them getting safely down. We had a very large, reluctant audience right before a piece of violence that were being so stubborn about moving, and they finally had to say, you will get hurt, you have to move back.
I, you know what, it's so interesting because along with the dropping the couple of lines and being thrown off with the first two audiences prior to the preview, the very first preview, there was a kid, and I call him a kid just because it's more behavior, it's more of his behavior that was childlike, but who didn't move off of a certain area that I need to go to. Yeah, he wasn't moving or anybody, apparently. And that's annoying. I mean, I understand, but in life it's annoying. Like in life, if
it's
you're trying,
rude.
If you care, it's rude.
Right.
And so, but you're going to have those people. And I hate that at that time he succeeded in intimidating me. I decided it would be too much trouble to try to ask him to move. So I went back down the way that I came. And now, if that I challenge him to return,
yeah.
Because now it's just like, oh no, you're gonna get up, uh-huh. Period. And you don't even have to. Now, for the most part, at least for me, I don't really have to struggle. I don't struggle. It's almost just eye contact or just the way that you
pointing.
Might point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they'll it's awesome. It's awesome because they're not. It's not as though the audience is like. It's like they're being told, it's like they've taken on their part, their character. They are a character.
I was going to ask you that. Do you cast us as anything particular? I mean, do you see us as a mob in your world, or do you always remember, or are you always conscious that we're not in your world?
No.
Sometimes they're a mass of people.
That you use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think of them as the audience as they're friends, especially in the really vulnerable scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're there for me, and they're helping me go to a kind of a scary place.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel safe with them. I don't feel like I don't trust them, or I don't want to show them this part.
And is that different than it would be if you were on a proscenium or at more distance?
Hopefully not, because
right.
We're always trying to tell the truth and nuance things. But when you really know that they're right there next to you, like I said, I literally had the impulse to reach out and grab some girl's hand because I was getting so upset.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I didn't. It was just an impulse that I had for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to be doing that when you're doing proscenium or you're doing a thrust or anything like that. But you do have a wall of protection.
Mm-hmm.
You read them in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you are able to feel the audience response more acutely because of the proximity? Or is that something? I mean, I know that actors feel that they can kind of feel the house no matter what.
It's a little more heightened, but we do. No matter what the theater, you can feel the house and the nature of what's going on. But you should talk about how you say sometimes you feel big. I do.
Well, just by acting. This is...
or my direction, I think.
No, but it is because... But You were right. And you know what I must say, since this is you've allowed me to just talk about this, but I did. I was like, Sean, I need the energy needs to be more. And I'm like exhausted. This is, say we run a scene or something and I would be tired already. But he was like, the energy's low. I'm like, are we watching the scene? And he doesn't say I kind of. He's like, I need it louder. Need it louder. And I'm just like, okay, but I'll be shouting. But that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And so I do the scene. And actually, like a child, I rebelled. And I was like, oh, you want it louder? Oh, you're going to get it louder.
And I'll show you.
I'll show you loud.
And then he's like, that was awesome. That was awesome. That's what he'll do. And you know what? He was right. He's right about it's not too loud. It's actually not too big for this space. The acting that I'm doing is actually not that different than if I were on a proscenium stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not mm-hmm. toning it because you can't tone in this play. There's nothing toned down. My voice is louder. It would probably work. You know what I mean? It would even work on the proscenium stage. But mm-hmm. it's just, I did. I felt big. And it's not too big. It fits perfectly. And it's
a big world.
It's a big world.
Yeah.
And we have to remember, too, that there are also people that are seated up above that have to hear as well.
Right, right.
So I can feel myself when I'm into the floor and I know that people are right there with me. Especially as it gets more and more emotional. And then I always have to remember the Joes that played there. $2 up top. Got to hear
me,
too.
More than two.
Yeah, I know. I was just quoting.
Well, I was thinking about the question of scale because particularly when you were mentioning the kind of filmic or television quality that, you know, there are some people who you're right up against. But there are people who, particularly when the house is packed or pretty far away, there are the people up in the gallery. And also the way it's staged, sometimes the people you're responding to are halfway across the room. So I was wondering how you mediated that. And it sounds like you're saying you just do it big and you don't worry about it. And it seems to work.
No. It's not a willy-nilly big. It really isn't. It's targeted.
Are you talking about times like when you turn and you can't find your scene partner?
Right.
Or,
like, is that what you're...
Yeah. And just...
You do have to laser in on them mm-hmm. and share. Right. Because you'll have people standing behind you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I, like I said before, I'm so grateful for having the opportunity in my career to have done TV work and to have that many crew people standing around you and have to be intimate. It's helped me so much with this mm-hmm. and being able just to be brave enough to give them the play with them standing, to not put that shell around that I was talking about mm-hmm. earlier.
Mm-hmm. Not just go in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, another thing I wondered about, as a director, one of your jobs is to tell the audience where to be paying attention. And on a stage with nothing between them and the actors, that's not as hard. Did you have to use different tools to make sure that people knew where to be focusing?
No, I don't think so. It's just sound lights, mm-hmm. you know, is a good way to directionalize it. But I think in a production like this, I think one of the greatest things that the audience has with Promenade Theater is they have autonomy, which means that they can look wherever they want to look, and that you do your job as a director in order to tell a story to say, like, well, things are happening over here, but an audience should feel free to wander if they want to wander or look at some of the architecture in the room or look at it from a completely different viewpoint that they may not be able to see as much as some other people, but they really want to get it from this certain viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So as far as directing the audience's gaze, I didn't worry too much about that. I just knew that the various scenes should happen, like we should have a ping pong effect of various scenes, mm-hmm. like moving back and forth throughout the room as quickly as possible to not let the audience settle for too long in one location.
Well, you used height, right, in the set. I mean, maybe more than you would have needed to in a regular set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the benches were a pretty late addition to things, mm-hmm. but I'm very thankful that we ended up adding them. They were just, we brought them into rehearsal one day. I was like, you guys have benches now. Good luck. Use them. See you later. So.
Same blocking. Now you have benches.
Okay. It'll be like audience, sort of.
Well, and but not just the benches. There's the throne and there are the pile of chairs.
And the throne was a late addition too. It came, I think a lot of the height. Was a late, very, in fact, all the hype besides the pilot chairs were very late additions into it.
Just I was grateful for that myself as an audience member because I didn't have to jostle to see the things I wanted to see if there was a big mob of people around.
Yeah, as an audience member, I'm thankful for the height to being able to use it or having the actors up there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, are there certain kinds of plays that particularly lend themselves to this device?
There are probably easy plays to wrestle into this form a little bit easier than other plays. But, I imagine that there are some plays out there that just wouldn't deserve this treatment. And anything that's really over an hour and a half, you really can't do this.
Not that this play is under an hour and a half as written.
No. I sort of had some dialogue with the play in order to lose some things to get it down to an hour and a half. But
about an hour you lost, I think. Is that right?
I probably cut about 2/3 of the play, much to some people's dismay and other people's joy.
Well, as someone who was standing up, it was my joy for sure.
You can't have an intermission in a promenade piece. I think it does the play a disservice because you ruin environment. And then if the audience is standing, what are they going to do on intermission? Just stand out in the lobby. So it doesn't make much sense to have an intermission during a promenade play. So that's the biggest thing. Like if it's an hour and a half or if it's an hour and a half or less, then I think that it's a good candidate for a promenade play. And some plays work better in this style than other plays, I imagine.
Chekhov's out.
I think I would love that.
I know. So I said that, you're going to be like, no.
I could
have a really
sisters.
Crowded Three Sisters.
Right.
Well, I was wondering, I mean, to me it felt like, because it's a very political play, that the mob, the people of England were appropriately part of the story and that somehow that would – maybe that's a made-up reason after the fact, but to me it seemed like a justification for doing this.
Yeah, I think all – Renaissance, Elizabethan, Carolinian, Jacobean drama is great candidates for this type of world because most of the audience when they were written were standing anyways.
Right. So it had that element already. Mm-hmm. Well, as an audience member, I had two reactions that felt important to how it felt to be there. One was that very quickly it didn't feel that weird. And I thought, it's kind of like being at the Renaissance Fair or any kind of street theater. You actually know how to do this. You've done it before. And that surprised me. But I say, after kind of walking into the theater and feeling awkward and not knowing where to go and maybe the first few minutes, suddenly I said, oh, I know how to do this. I've done this before. But there was one time where it felt that it had meaning that was relevant to what was happening, and that was not the very end of the play, but very nearly, when Geoffrey dies a really horrific death. Well, not him, luckily, but Edward II. And that scene was not played in the killing corner. If I had been in a seat in a proscenium stage, I would have kind of probably wanted to shy away, but I would have watched. But I would have felt like, I don't really want to see this. In the promenade staging, I had to choose to see it because I had to actually kind of put my head between some other people's. And suddenly, I'm complicit. I'm choosing to see this. It's not being imposed on me. And that felt really interesting and important. I don't know if this is kind of one of those serendipities of you just try something and cool stuff comes up, or is that something that you would all think about as you're staging something like this?
Well, it does go back. When I am staging something like that, it goes in with everything, just the sense of autonomy. Like you have the choice to look at anything or you have the choice to walk away from anything you want. And so complicité, I'm not sure I think about, or some people say being like conspirator with everything. I'm not sure if I agree with that. It's just, especially when you're dealing with such graphic subject matter, I think it's better that the audience has autonomy. And most people want, strangely and maybe even sadistically, I think most people want to watch it. And
yeah, it's like rubbernecking on the highway or something. Yeah.
When they have the choice, then they don't feel like it's forced upon them quite as much. Mm-hmm. Like the people in the seats feel like it's forced upon them, mm-hmm. specifically that scene. But the people on the ground, nobody has ever said that it was a cruel or sadistic directorial choice, to at least to me, to made, be made. But I heard people in the seats complain of.
Well, isn't it, it's in the script, though, isn't it?
It is. It's historical. Uh-huh. So.
So you didn't make this up.
No, but just doing people don't know that, you know.
Right, so one thing I asked you at the audition, you said, do you have any questions? I said, what are you doing about the poker?
Yeah.
Because it's just the most famous rumor of how he was killed.
Well, have you had feedback from those members of the audience who were up in the balcony about what that experience was like? I was trying to imagine, is it more difficult for them to follow the action? Is it, what's good for them about it?
I think that the people that sit up there like the distance, and they sort of not only do they enjoy watching the play for the most part, but they also enjoy watching the audience move about. So that's, I've heard a lot of that, and I haven't heard a lot of complaints about not being able to see or anything. They feel sort of that they get another dimension that the people on the floor don't get. But then the people on the floor feel like they get another dimension that the people in the seats don't get.
Right. So it's much more probably an objective feeling of what, rather than being right in the thick of it.
And I'm not sure what the rules are, but there have been people that have just come down on the floor. They've got tired of
My friends have done
being
that.
Withdrawn mm-hmm. and wanted to come join the party.
How about the other way? Have people withdrawn from it?
Yes.
They've
gone upstairs, but not so much because of it's simply because my back hurts. Uh-huh, it's one of those moments. So it's nothing, anything deep or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just basically, you know, I have. Okay. There was a woman who was seated up above. That was interesting. I never knew that people were up above interpreted Edward's death as imposed, and then those down below. That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. That's really, really cool. Really, really amazing.
We had the mother and daughter storm out.
Oh,
yeah.
It was
over, and they were upstairs. Mm-hmm.
The people upstairs, though, will say, there was – even before Edward's death, this was following his brother Kent's execution. A woman came out. And so I have a scene entrance in that lobby area. So I was out there. And it was interesting because she was so traumatized and just couldn't talk. And the house person, the person outside was trying to, just had her sit down. And she was waiting for her husband to come down. But I asked her if she was okay and she needed, and she just didn't want to have anything to do with me. Mm. Just please. I don't want to, she couldn't look at me, which I did. I was traumatized by that. That traumatized me. Cause I'm like, you know, I understand in there that's traumatizing, but it was interesting in that moment that she couldn't even separate, I guess, maybe me from the piece and just didn't want to, I can't.
You were on that other team that made herself.
Yeah, and so it's – and I don't know if I'm just immune because I sit home and watch Forensic Files all the time or what – or just because I'm part of this production. I wish I could see this. I really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't wish to get sick so that then I can't, you know. But you know, I wish I could see it because I kind of miss – I want to be traumatized in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds sick. But I do. But she was seated upstairs. So you'd think, though, that downstairs would be a little more affected.
Immediate, right?
Yeah.
I think it just has to do with the choice that people have because they feel like they have a choice a little bit more downstairs.
Yeah. So I talked to a woman who brought her mother for her birthday, and they sat upstairs. And just on the positive side, she said, my mom can't stop smiling. She's been smiling throughout the whole thing.
Wow.
So I think everyone just is going to have a
different
reaction to it.
Well, it has, at the same time that it's very exciting. It has a kind of festival feeling to it, maybe.
Yeah,
I could imagine that would fuel a smile. I really thank you for coming to talk about it. I found it just a fascinating experience. I mean, theatrically, I was trying to imagine what it would be like to have seen it just in a more conventional staging, and would I have had the same reaction? And I don't think so. I think that the staging was it's great acting, and it's a kind of overwhelming and interesting script. But there is something about this experience that's, I think, really fascinating, and I hope people will seek out, because it was really quite illuminating to me. So thank you three for taking time right before performance to talk to me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of October 27th, 2008. On Monday, October 20th, at a star-studded gala celebrating 40 years of the Joseph Jefferson Awards, the Jeff Awards Committee presented 37 awards to celebrate excellence in Chicago Equity Theater. Over 700 artists gathered at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie to honor the 150 nominees. World premieres and adaptations dominated this year's ceremonies. Chicago Shakespeare Theater took home 5 awards, 4 of which went to their production, The Comedy of Errors. The Marriott Theater's production of Les Mis led the musical honors with 4 awards, including Actor in a Principal Role, going to John Cudia. Eileen Bevers of Apple Tree Theater received a special award for her lifetime of contributions. The ceremony was hosted by Cindy Gold and Nancy Voigt, directed by Michael Weber, and produced by Diane Hires. For a complete list of this year's recipients, click on over to Theater in Chicago News, and remember, the Non-Equity Award ceremony will be held next June 8th. A House with No Walls opens this November 1st at Timeline Theater. It is the 3rd drama in Thomas Gibbons' Race trilogy, the other 2 of which premiered in Chicago at Northlight Theater. The show is inspired by the true story about Philadelphia in 2002 during the construction of the city's Liberty Bell Center. The play had its world premiere in January 2007 and went on to be performed around the U.S. as part of the National New Play Network. Thomas Gibbons is currently playwright-in-residence at Interact Theater in Philadelphia. His A House with No Walls runs November 1st through December 21st. For more information, visit timelinetheater.com. Wicked enthusiasts are invited to dine with the cast members this Wednesday, October 29th and next November 5th. Dinner will be at the Hotel Monaco. It starts at 5:30, followed by a 7:30 performance of Wicked. In addition to dinner and the opportunity to mingle with the cast, fans will also receive a special gift. This pre-show dinner option is available for $30 in addition to the price of the ticket. You just have to use the code DINNER at time of ordering. The Chicago Company of Wicked is now playing at the Oriental Theater. The production is the top-grossing show in Chicago theater history. But after more than 3 years on the stage, the company will take its final bow on January 25th. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank our guests this week for giving us the honor of interviewing them. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.